Welcome to the Operation Move podcast, where we talk about living your life on purpose. My name is Zoe and I'm with Katie, and we are talking today about what we're going to be talking about.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. The Operation Move podcast is brought to you by Learn to Run. For more information, go to operationmove.com.au.
Right, let's talk about the things.
Let's. So I thought that we should probably, the easiest place to start would probably be talking about the start of Operation Move, because we get a lot of questions about it. And I kind of, because we've been doing it for so long, I kind of assume that everybody knows our origin story, but a lot of people don't. So I thought I'd let you talk about that because you're the one who started it all.
Yeah, fantastic. I make the same assumption. It's a dangerous one to make. And because really Operation Move started back in 2012, which to me now feels like a lifetime ago, because it was. I was a
1-year-old.
I know. It's terrifying, isn't it? I had a 2-year-old. I don't know what happened in between, but there you go. So Operation Move started back when I had a personal blog. We used to have these things that sometimes were referred to as mummy blogs, because if you're a mummy, you have to put that before everything. So we had mummy blogs, and mine was called Kate Says Stuff, because my name is Kate and I say a lot of things. And I'd been blogging for a few years and had come to a juncture in my life where my baby was, you know, just shy of 2 years old, and I was looking in the mirror and just hating it, hating that I didn't like how I looked, I didn't like how I felt. I was a pack-a-day smoker. I've never exercised in my life at that point. And there are times in your life, I think, when you get a very clear vision of where you are now and where you are going to be in the next 10 years, and I did not like what the next 10 years looked like.
It's amazing how that happens. Like, I remember sort of having a similar thing, and it's sort of like you're just trucking along, and you know, you've got a baby, and often other kids, or in your case, many other children.
Yeah.
And it all, you know, you don't kind of notice yourself because you see yourself every day, and then all of a sudden you look in the mirror and you're like, wow. So this is, and not even so much, although at the time when I sort of, about the same time, I was probably maybe about 30 kilos heavier or so, but it wasn't even so much, I don't think, about that. It's just sort of get to a certain point, particularly in that really intense period of motherhood where there's almost nothing that isn't about you fulfilling someone else's need.
Yep. Yep. And for me, I think the epiphany came around. It was not even so much about, like, I did not like how I looked, but it was more because how I felt was showing in how I looked. And I was having those first kind of signs that maybe emphysema was on the way. I was, you know, finding it hard to breathe. I needed Ventolin every day. And this was after having smoked for, you know, 20 years. So unsurprising, but it still came as a shock to me. And I think I just had this moment where I went, well, you're 36, like, you're not that old. You've had 4 children. What are you doing to your body? Like, one day you're not going to have the option to turn this around, so you better do it now. And for me, that, like, having, I tried to do, you know, there's a really popular in Australia 12-week weight loss program, and I had tried to do that earlier in that year and failed miserably at week 3, because I don't believe anyone should exist on 1,200 calories a day, certainly not someone who is raising 4 children and trying to burn the, you know, the 500 to 1,000 calories a day that you are expected to burn. Like, it's not a realistic thing for many people. And that made me feel worse about myself. And so I think I just thought, you know what, you've got to do it your own way. And so, you know, I jumped on the blog and said, okay, I am going to start running. If anyone wants to be accountable and try and start moving more, because back then it wasn't even specifically about running for other people. And I asked people to kind of jump on my blog once a week and tell me how many minutes they had moved for, and make a promise to themselves to move for a certain amount of minutes in the coming week. And it probably went on like that for the better part of 8 or 9 months, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I seem to remember that. And I remember that too, because it was in stark contrast. I was working part-time at a recruitment agency, and they had sort of an office Biggest Loser thing going on at the same time, and because it was an office, they couldn't make it too much about weight loss because that would be a bit controversial. But they had, you would have to submit your minutes of exercise and also the days that you were within your decided calorie limits. And
calories, there's a podcast.
And I remember not really liking it that much because of that. And if you go back to, because I'm also a recovering blogger, and if you go back to my blog, I can see when I started running, and I was like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, but a life for me without chocolate is not a life I'm interested in. So I'm just going to do kind of a bit of moderation and do a bit of both and not get too bogged down in this sort of 1200 calorie lie that everyone tells you about.
Oh God, it's such rubbish. And I think that's why it worked for me this time, because I didn't do anything with diet. I just decided I wanted to do something to feel better. And as soon as I took the focus off how I looked, you know, something really deeply shifted in me. And so, you know, we were doing these moving minutes and people were checking in. And I remember thinking for the longest time, you know, I want this to be its own thing. It should be a website. And I couldn't do it because I was smoking and I felt like such a massive fraud. And I thought, I can't go out there and present myself as this health, wellness, fitness blogger / business person when I'm coming back from a run and lighting up a smoke. And for me, it was about 8 or 9 months after I started running that I finally was able to go, okay, this is more important to me than this lifetime habit that I've carried with me, and finally quit smoking. And I think it was only a month or two after that we did launch the website. And by that point, obviously, we were working in a partnership as well, and Operation Move was starting to look much less like an add-on to a personal blog and much more like a community in and of itself, where we were able to start engaging with women and really making life-changing programs and ideas and things for them, and creating somewhere where they could feel safe and not feel like they had to conform to the whole, oh, you must eat this many calories, you must look like this and all that.
Yeah, and I kept smoking for a while after that.
but that was okay.
But it is one of those things where, on the one hand, I kind of, you know, it is kind of ridiculous to be, you know, I ran 3 half marathons while smoking about a pack a day before it then later on for me clicked too, saying, you know, like, I feel crappy when I'm on a run and I just want it to be different, and the running was important enough that I was able to give up the smoking. But by the same token, I also kind of look at it as a thing of, on the other hand, I was not using that as an excuse. Like, I could say, well, I can't run, you know, like, I smoke, I can barely breathe. But I think that it is proof that you can actually do a lot more than what you would think. Like, there was no way, if I'd look at it now, I would think of running 21 kilometres while smoking. But you can do it, and then it's a positive thing that you're replacing it with rather than just taking something away, which I think is why in the end I was able to quit smoking, because I was like, right, I'm just going to go for a run every morning. I'm going to get my happy hormones ticking over, and then I will be able to get through this really not nice period that is withdrawal. And now I wouldn't even like, I still see some ex-smokers who are like, oh, I miss it so much. And I'm like, really? Do you?
No, like, I have those days.
I miss the, at most, I would miss the idea of it. Yeah. Like, I get nostalgic about it, but it's not a real thing. Like, if I actually think about it, I think about, okay, you know, having a smoke with a drink might be nice, but what's not nice is me putting kids to bed and being antsy because I want to be outside having a smoke.
Yeah. And this nostalgia is about a time and a place that's past. It's not even about the smokes. That's what I keep telling myself. Like, every now and then, you know, I walk past someone who's smoking, I get a waft and I think, gee, I could just have one. And being the person I am and knowing myself well enough at nearly 40, I know that I will never be able to have just one. I'm not a just one kind of person, and it's not a good idea for me. And the majority of the time I hate the way it smells, but every now and then, you know, I have that moment. And I think for me it's tied in with, you know, being 18 and going out with my best friend and running amok. And, you know, that's what I'm nostalgic for, really. It's not the smoke I am hauling into my lungs and damaging myself with. But I also feel like, you know, with both of us, it's one of the things that maybe makes us easier to relate to for our community, because we were both smoking. We are so far from, you know, this perfect athletic, genetically blessed people who were, you know, running cross country through our teens. I mean, we share a great hatred of school cross country, having both of us, I think, wagged most of those days.
I mean, definitely both most unlikely to succeed, you know, in that area. You know, like, people would look at me at the gym, because I used to go to the gym because I was too scared to go outside, and they would look at me and they would be like, there is no way that this person is going to be, you know, running for an hour on the treadmill. And that's exactly what I did. And some of the trainers would be like, what is wrong with your diet that you are still so fat? Which is about the point that I decided to start running outside. Because people sort of have this assumption that if you're thinner, you're healthier. And even at that point, I could outrun a lot of the more slender people at the gym. And I think that's sort of what kept me going when maybe I was having a bad week where I wasn't feeling great about my body. I'd be like, well, I can still run 8Ks in an hour, which is where our 8K thing came from.
Yeah, and it's that story that we've been told over and over and over again, that fit people look like this, fat people look like that, the two are not the same, and it is such rubbish. And I was telling someone just earlier today that I feel like, you know, we grew up in an era where we had, you know, the magazines, Dolly, Girlfriend, we had whatever hang-ups our parents had about weight, all of that presented to us, which was enough to deal with. And now, like, I've got an 11-year-old daughter who has all of that, plus she has the internet showing her all the time what the cultural expectation is, and it terrifies me. And I mean, not just for my daughters, obviously for my sons as well, but particularly for her, I guess, because she's the age she is, and I look at what she's watching on YouTube and what she is attracted to and what she's interested in, and it's the same stuff I was. It's makeup and it's clothes, and she really loves that stuff, and that's exciting for me because I love that stuff too. But I'm so conscious of that overtone, and so I think, you know, if she's getting all these messages every day, the least I can do is be a message that she sees daily where I value myself and my body, and I do that by moving it and by feeling good about it, because how it looks is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so hyper aware of that, even with mine, and they're a bit younger, you know, they'll sort of from time to time have asked me, you know, why am I doing this or why am I doing that? And I've always said, because it makes me stronger. And so that's what they associate exercise with. They don't have now some of the populist media is starting to come into play, and they will sort of talk about things that I wish that they weren't quite there yet, but, you know, with talking about things to do with exercise and eating and weight. But up until this point, where it's just been me talking to them, it's just all to do with strength. And that's what they associate it with. And I'm having to kind of correct them now and say, no, actually, if you don't eat enough food, then you are going to put on weight because your metabolism will be in the toilet. And, you know, the oldest one is 8, so it's not like she's exactly taking all of that in. But I'm kind of the opinion that eventually she will. So there's no point in kind of dumbing it down. At this point, I'm just going to say what I think, and she will take some of it on board, and some of it we'll talk about in more detail when she gets older. But it's a barrage of stuff, particularly now that my kids are so into videos and YouTube and gaming and Minecraft and all of that sort of stuff. And and you do have to be sort of hyper aware of what they are actually consuming and say, you know, like, okay, you know, this person is presenting a body positive message, so that's okay for you to watch, but I don't want you watching this person.
And it's everywhere. It is in, like, my daughter loves watching Minecraft stuff, and she likes the gaming YouTube videos and stuff like that. And I feel like that should be fairly innocuous, but it's just not. There are so many undercurrents in everything that she is exposed to. And one of the things I find tricky as well is because I grew up, my parents were not people who had any particular kind of exercise. I think when I was really little, my mum played squash or something because that was cool in the 80s. But aside from that, my parents didn't do anything. So there was no kind of value in moving to me growing up. I didn't see it as a priority. So for me, coming to that at, you know, 36, and I'm now rapidly approaching my 40th birthday. So I've had 4 years out of my 40 of understanding how being fit can make you feel and the value of that. That's not a very long time to kind of pass those messages on and to have actually adopted them fully myself. And so I guess, you know, when I think about what I'm showing my kids, they know, like they see me in the morning, I pull on my Lycra. It's just, it's a running joke with them. I drop them at school and I'm that mum in the Lycra. I'm, you know, big deal, whatever. I am that mum. I'm proud to be that mum. That makes me happy. But it's tricky for me too because my kids don't love the moving that I love. Like my daughter doesn't want to run particularly. She's tried it a few times. It's not her favourite. She wants to ride a bike. I do not understand the riding of bikes. I think, you know, it clearly is fun if she wants to do it, but it is so not my thing. So, you know, I want to find a middle ground with her with something we can enjoy. But I am also hyper aware that she has to love the moving she's doing if she's going to keep doing it for its own sake.
Yeah, and I think that's a big Operation Move thing in general, is that you have to love it. Like if people say to me, oh, I just don't love running, don't do it. You know, I think there is a level where you have to go through at the beginning, like with anything, there's a level of discomfort that you have to go to. But it is one of those things where there has to be some kind of underlying drive that is something that interests you on some level, because there's bound to be something else that's better if you don't like it. And I think for me growing up, like I had such so much shame associated with any kind of sport or movement because I felt just really uncoordinated, and it was such a humiliating experience for me that to now be in a position where, you know, I'm running and I'm doing CrossFit is just totally bizarre. You know, like it's because, and that did take a lot of help to get me over the hump of that sort of negative childhood experience, because most things that you want to try, there is a level of you being in public while you're doing it. So I remember when I would go to the gym, and if it was a 24-hour gym and if no one was there, that was like Christmas to me. That was like the best day that I could possibly imagine, is being somewhere where no one could see me. Or, you know, if I went for a run really early and there was no one there, because certainly when I started, I would never even make eye contact with anyone that I was running around, because I just wanted to be completely invisible.
And in a completely seamless segue, in our MindFit program, which is the newest Operation Move offering. At the moment, we're talking a bit about extrinsic and intrinsic rewards, and how, because a lot of the women who do MindFit, it's an add-on to Learn to Run, and it's 4 weeks of mindset practice to help support getting moving with Learn to Run. And especially for people who, like us 4 years ago, hadn't done any kind of exercise in a really long time, they don't know yet what we know, and that's that you don't run with your legs, you run with your brain. You know, it's 80-90% getting yourself out the door and telling yourself that you can. So MindFit is about helping develop that, developing the habits. And as on top of that, it's about creating space for ourselves as women, because we are busy and that's just a reality. So in the group we're running at the moment, we're talking a bit about extrinsic rewards and how important they are when you're starting, because you don't know when you are starting to run, you don't know what running that 5K is going to feel like yet. You only know the 30 seconds that you're in, and you may not be enjoying that at all. And some people get runners high right from the start. Others, you know, are at week 8 and they go, oh, actually, this is not too bad, but you've got to get to week 8. So I think, you know, that value of extrinsic reward and understanding what drives you and playing yourself towards that, the mind games you play and saying to yourself, okay, when I get to week 8, I'm going to do this for myself or I'm going to do that for myself. If that's what it takes to get you to that stage, do it, because we know, and they don't know yet, that, you know, they're going to get to the end of that and want to keep going anyway because they will love it at that stage, mostly.
Yeah, there's a tipping point, you know, it's like you, when you start, no one really believes that they can do it because it seems impossible. I mean, and in a lot of ways it is impossible from where you start, because you don't think about the next session. You're thinking about, how am I ever going to be able to run 30 minutes without stopping? And at that point, it is completely impossible. And we know, because we have seen so many people do it, that you just build on it and build on it and build on it, and you keep showing up and you gradually get better. And every time you reach a milestone that you thought you would never get to, it kind of makes it that little bit easier to get to the next one. But it does require a lot of belief from other people before that sort of kicks in for yourself, and then you can go and take on things that you would never have thought. Like, I have such clear memories of talking in that, when we were doing an Operation Move check-in with the minutes, where I'd just run 12 kilometres and I was aware that a half marathon was roughly double that. And I was like, I would never do that. That's completely insane. I would never be capable of it. My body is not built to do that. There is no way. And then probably a couple of years later, I ran 50 kilometres, because at a certain point, it's like, if you can run 10, well, then you can run more. You might not want to, you know, which is often the case. Like, people say, I'm not going to enjoy running for 5 or 6 hours, but more often than not, I do enjoy running for 5 or 6 hours, so that's okay for me to do that. So I think there is just that point where people sort of cross over and they sort of have that light bulb moment with running, but it does take a while, and you do have to get through a bit of discomfort in the beginning. And, you know, whichever way, I mostly rewarded myself with coffee, I think, but, you know, whatever works.
And that's where I think, you know, having that additional support, that's where our Learn to Run groups are great, because obviously we have women in these private groups and they can buoy each other up, as well as having our amazing coaches and mentors in there supporting them. But that's where I think, you know, the more support you can have, the better. And it is that case of looking so far into the future that you're too scared to do what's in front of you right now. I have a group on Facebook called KM Chicks, which is just a community group similar to the Operation Move community group, but a bit smaller, and we talk a bit about mindset stuff. And I shared a link to an article about Caitlin Moran, a speech she did to teenage girls recently. And the thing that stuck with me from that the most is the idea that life is like a string of pearls, and that you're only ever getting one pearl at a time. You've got the 60 seconds that's in front of you. Nothing else actually matters. And for someone like me, and I know like you as well, because we are planners, it's hard to grasp that sometimes. We are looking into the future and we're looking into the past, and we're working on a timeline where we are constantly aware of those two things. And I think a lot of women particularly come to Learn to Run and they're seeing that 5K goal or that half hour goal at the end, and it is intimidating. But if they just stopped and took the 60 seconds that are right in front of them right now and focused on those, they'd realise that it really doesn't matter. You never have to deal with more than that 60 seconds. You never have to deal with more than that particular run on that particular day. What happens in 2 weeks, in 4 weeks, in 12 weeks, none of that actually matters. And it especially doesn't matter right now, while you are making the decision to go out there and do something that is going to make you feel and be a better person.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fond of saying to people, either in Learn to Run or in the Far and Fast coaching, is that, you know, the run that you've got to do in a couple of days or in a week or in a month, that is future you's problem. That is not your problem. And by the time you get there, future you is going to be all over that. It will kick that run's ass, but you don't have to worry about that because that's future you's problem.
Yeah. And it's just such a good way to look at it. And I think, you know, as women, we are really good at planning ahead, and it's what we need to do to get through our days because our lives are busy and we're often juggling myriad different things. But it's to our detriment sometimes, particularly when it comes to this kind of thing.
For sure. And I think that too, even just having I think that what you can get into trouble when you're sort of planning out some of these, you know, fitness type goals on your own is essentially you sit down to do it. It's also intimidating that you go, there's no way I can do that. And that's also why I like having somebody else do all of my running programming for me, because I don't like to think about it. I like somebody else. You know, there's always the risk that you'll make everything too hard for yourself and push yourself too hard, or you'll avoid the things that you should really be doing, or any of that sort of stuff. It's always much better to have somebody else do it for you.
Yeah, and look, we have coaches for everything these days, and I honestly used to think a few years ago that it was a bit wanky, but to be perfectly honest, having worked with a number of coaches, I've worked with a business coach, I've worked with you as my running coach, I've worked with a trainer when I was learning my own qualifications as a coach myself now. I think everyone should have a coach for everything. Life coach and NLP practitioner, both of which sounds ridiculous to me in some ways, because what I actually do is just work with women looking at identifying things that may be causing them some issues in their lives, any emotional things that are blocking them, actual issues that they're dealing with on a daily basis, things around scheduling, time management. I've got a number of people I'm talking to about fitness, motivation, nutrition, things like that. That's the big advantage of having the Operation Move background, is that I can cover an awful lot of stuff with a fair bit of authority.
And also I think it's one of those things too where sometimes you kind of have a problem but you just can't quite put your finger on what it is exactly. Like you feel like, or maybe you have a problem and there's no solution. Like I remember ages ago having a life coaching session where I kind of felt just the problem was that I didn't have enough time. I was like, you know, like I'm doing too many things but I don't want to give anything up, which is apparently a common theme. But when I actually talked it through in the coaching session, they were like, actually, it's not that I have too many things. It's that one of the things that I'm doing, I'm not actually that passionate about, which is why it feels like such a chore to carve out time for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing that most of my clients find, that in our first session we really focus on getting clarity around what the big issue is, and in 90% of the cases it's not what they think it is. It's something completely different, and once we get to the heart of that issue, they're able to really turn things around and start making progress.
Yeah, because it's not that often, other than our normal Skype conversations that aren't recorded, that that people, you actually get that time to have somebody exclusively listen to you. Yeah. And where you're not kind of worried about, oh, I should stop talking about myself now, otherwise they're going to think I'm really self-obsessed. And you have someone who is actually really, really paying attention, and you can get deep down into what the actual issue is without kind of feeling like you're taking up too much space, which I don't think that anyone should feel, because I think that that's a whole other podcast about how women should be allowed to take up space. But I think that can happen when you're talking to your girlfriends or your family or your mum. You at a certain point you're like, I don't have a resolution here, but I'm going to stop talking because it's just too much for other people to handle.
Absolutely. And having someone who's not intimately connected with you or your life and doesn't know the other key players you're talking about means that, you know, you are going to get a really truly objective opinion. And sometimes that opinion or that suggestion might not be something you necessarily are comfortable with, but I think when you sit with things long enough, you see the truth in that kind of thing. And sometimes it is about taking more responsibility ourselves, but that's not a bad thing.
No, definitely not. And sometimes you need that, just that objective person to actually say the thing that maybe you're you know, your partner or your best friend wouldn't say, because they wouldn't want to hurt your feelings or feel like you'll take it too personally or whatever the issue is.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that is so rewarding for me now and what I'm doing is all through Operation Move, from the moment it began, the thing that has really driven me has been watching women making these amazing leaps in their own personal development. Like, the athletic side of it is interesting to me as well, but not the same way as it is for you. For me, it's always been about watching them develop as people and watching how getting fit changes their understandings of themselves and their abilities. And so for me now, being able to foster that in an even kind of greater way and in a one-on-one capacity has just been amazing. I'm loving my life sick at the moment.
And we've got a whole heap of questions that we got from the community group that we're going to be working our way through. And a lot of it is stuff that is quite specific to running training. So people want to know about, they want to know things about fueling for runs, and they want to know stuff about low heart rate training, which is something that I'm doing at the moment to build base. They want to know about all of this other stuff. But I think that having both of us talk to it from different points of view, like, I'm much more of a kind of, well, just, you know, go out there and do it. And sometimes people need a little bit more insight into the mindset. I mean, I have definitely done all of the excuses, and I think my turning point was when I was kind of sitting down one day and I was looking where I was and where I wanted to go, and I was kind of at that point where I could almost have quit, because I seemed to be a long way away from where the goal was. And I just thought, what if I didn't? Because I know what quitting looks like. I've done lots of quitting. But what I don't know is what happens if I just keep showing up. But that was a huge, long period of time for me to get to that point, which could have possibly been a lot quicker if earlier on in my life I'd had the insight that weight loss was never, ever, ever going to motivate me to do anything in any real way, and that I had to have something far greater than that to inspire me to get out the door early in the morning.
Yeah, and I feel like that's something that I'm working on with a number of people at the moment, actually. It seems to be a really common theme. And one of the things that I feel now is really important in achieving success in this as well as in all sorts of other things is really having a very clear vision of what's driving you or what you want or how you see yourself, what story you are telling about yourself. Because whatever you believe about yourself, if that's what's coming out of your mouth to other people, that's what they're going to believe. So if you're saying to yourself, I am a runner, then guess what? You're a runner. That's what it takes. If you get your shoes on, you walk out the door, you say, I'm a runner. Look at you. You're a runner. It's not a case of you have to run 20 kilometers and you're a runner. You don't have to run 4-minute kilometers and you're a runner. It's all about the story you're telling about yourself. And I think, you know, when we're aiming for those really long-ranging goals, like, I'm pretty sure I may have committed to run the Melbourne Marathon this year, all things going well.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, so that's a plan I have. And having run one marathon before a couple of years ago, I know exactly what that entails. But the thing that will get me over the line is that as soon as I said that, I saw myself. It's actually the day after my 40th birthday. I am visualizing myself already crossing that line. I know all the work that has to happen before that, but I know it will, because I'm a person who's going to run the Melbourne Marathon. I've decided to be that person.
Yeah, and you've just got to find a way to be, you know, the hero of your own story, I think, you know, and whatever that story looks like, I don't care what the story is, but you want to be able to do something that is going to make you feel like you are courageous and brave and happy and all of those things. And for me, that, for the most part, that is running, and also seeing, you know, the stories of all of the women in our community and all of that sort of stuff. But it's different for different people. So people say to me, you know, I only ever want to run 5 kilometres, and, you know, I say don't say only. And then we say, okay, we're going to absolutely kick ass for that, because I wrote this thing ages ago about how a marathon is not more impressive than a 5K. And at the time, a lot of people were like, yes, that's fantastic. And a lot of other people were like, really? You know, like it's so much further and it takes so much more, but it doesn't. Not the way I ran my 5Ks, it doesn't. So I think that is something that's really easy to slip into with fitness, is that more is better. But more isn't always better. You know, sometimes, you know, you can really easily get into a situation where it starts to take away from your life rather than adding to it. So I think that's also sort of what we're all about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing, I guess, that I love most about our community, especially as we've watched it grow over the last 4 years, is that everyone comes into it with such a different story. Everyone's goals are so different. For some, that might be a marathon. For some, it might be 5K. For some, it might be a 30K walk or a bike ride. And it doesn't even matter, because at the end of the day, none of us are living anyone else's lives. We're all living our own lives. We all know our own physical issues that we may have going on. We all have our own emotional issues going on. We've got our own lives. We've got our own things to deal with. So we also then have the ability to say, this is worth celebrating, whatever that is. So for me, a few weeks ago, that was running 2Ks. And for someone who ran a marathon 2 years ago, that might not sound worth celebrating. But for me, having had some health issues earlier this year and not run for 3 months, it was absolutely worth celebrating. And I love that in our group, it's not just me that thinks that. And I think that's something we really foster and really build up in people, the understanding that you don't compare yourself to anyone else, and you don't even compare yourself to who you were last week, because it doesn't matter. It's who you are right this minute that counts, and how you feel about yourself right this minute that counts. Look at
definitely.
Us.
Rah-rah.
You need pom-poms.
We do. So I think that's probably pretty much what we wanted to talk about today. But if you have any questions or any topics that you would like us to cover in the coming weeks, then you can just let us know either on Facebook or in the community group. We will put links to everything in the show notes, presumably, once I write the show notes. And you can ask us any questions that you would like, and we'll just continue on doing our thing. And we're probably planning on having it be a weekly podcast, and so hopefully once we have had a bit more time to sort of see how long it's going to take me to edit everything and upload everything, then I'll have a better idea of when you can expect it every week to show up in iTunes. And once it is in iTunes, if you could pop in and give it a rating and a review, that would be very nice, preferably a nice review, because it is our first podcast and you don't want to scare us.
Yeah, be kind. Winning at podcasting.
So, yep.
That's about it, hey? We haven't got much else to say, shockingly, for today.
Shocking, yes.
But so where can you find us online? That's the big question. You can find me at katiemichellecoaching.com.au, as well as floating around the Operation Move groups in all their glory.
And you can find all of the Operation Move stuff at operationmove.com.au and on most social media platforms as OpMove. Unfortunately, somebody has stolen OpMove on Twitter and I'm forced to use OpMove Coaching. But pretty much everywhere else it is OpMove, and they haven't even tweeted since 2013.
That's so
extremely
rude.
Irritating to me. So yeah, that's where you can find us, and we will talk to you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.